Chapter 4. Living with Moonzip. The day of the first audition had arrived. Athelflaed had been queuing outside the Canterbury School of Performing Arts to take her number, and then filed in together with the other candidates through the fire doors into an open hall. It was empty, apart from 5 chairs and a table at one end. At the other, the wannabe students sat down against the wall. Athelflaed had left Moonzip with her brother for the first time since she had started looking after him, in order to go to Canterbury for the first audition. Even though the boys got on fine and spent hours playing together, Athelflaed had asked Natalia to pop around, just in case. A few days after Moonzip's arrival, Athelflaed had rehearsed some songs in front of a selected audience. Natalia was on the sofa between her boyfriend Ayan and Dean. Samantha had perched on the arm next to her brother. Athelstan and Moonzip were sitting on the carpet, and Athelflaed's father was settled in the armchair. Her short list started with Gladys Knight's Midnight Train to Georgia. She changed a pronoun from he to she. She kept dreaming that one day she'd be a star, a superstar, but she didn't get far. But she found out the hard way that dreams don't always come true. Moonzip pulled the sides of his mouth down and nodded to himself. "Hey girl, you sure can sing," he whistled. He was the only one who had never heard Athelflaed. The others were more analytical. "I like it," said Ayan. "It's got a good rhythm, but it still gives you time to do those warbles and stall stuff. The end's great. But what happens in the audition? Is it live music or karaoke style or what?" asked Dean. There were two more. Al Green's Take Me to the River and Last Night by Little Walter, which was probably the riskiest of the three, the likeliest to stand out and the likeliest to fail. "Powerful," her dad decided. "Kinda neat," was Moonzip's appraisal. "Bit of a flat ending," was Dean's assessment. So Athelflaed crossed it off the list. Athelflaed was not only a musical snob, but she was proud of it. So much so that Samantha had once called her a musical fundamentalist for her instant rejection of anything that was not blues, soul, or carefully selected R&B. But Athelflaed could just about put up with her brother's taste of music, hard rock and heavy metal, her father's classical music, and Natalia's hip-hop and R&B, because they had an ideology, as she put it. Samantha, on the other hand, listened to the latest number one hit non-stop for 2 weeks before deleting it from her life. In Athelflaed's view, this was a sign of a weak character. "If I had my own business or factory or shop or whatever," she explained maliciously, "one of the first questions I'd ask in any interview would be, what music do you listen to? And if anyone answered, oh, a bit of everything, I'd kick them out straight away because that's not reliable and it's not serious. And you'd be the first, Sam. You might want to ask yourself why I would want to work for you in the first place," answered Samantha reasonably. The conversation went no further because Natalia, as always, stepped in to keep the peace. "Stop quarrelling. You're like a married couple who stay together for your sake," Athelflaed shot back. Samantha giggled. It was Samantha who had driven Athelflaed to Canterbury for the audition. Now she was alone, apart from 60 other candidates. Spread over 5 days, Athelflaed reckoned that there must have been some 300 candidates for some 50 or 60 vacancies, less than 1 in 5, in just 2 auditions. Today she needed to break into the shortlist. None of them did what Athelflaed could do. There were budding actors reading Shakespeare, breakdancers, there was a magician, and quite a number of rock singers, one of whom did his own version of Joe Kerr's Too Hot to Handle. There were ballet dancers, an opera singer, some singer-songwriters with their own guitar, but nobody had Athelflaed's natural soul voice. After an hour or two, Athelflaed's number was called out, and she took the eternal 27 steps that separated her from the teachers. There was a mix-up when the first chords of Puccini's Nessun Dorma sounded out. Fortunately, the confusion helped her calm down, The first guitar line rang out and she began. I don't know why I love him like I do, with all the changes that he put me through. In the end, Athelfled has settled for the lesser known and slightly funkier Take Me to the River by Al Green, partly relying on the surprise factor and partly not wanting to tempt fate with Gladys Knight's lyrics. She found out the hard way that dreams don't always come true. After keeping the introduction basic and her nerves under control, in the second stanza she sang in a different register, more in the tune of Stevie Wonder's Superstition, before letting loose at the end with a series of whoops, warbles and acoustic somersaults, while swaying and shuffling across the floor. Take me to the river, wash me down. When the music wound down, she opened her eyes and smiled. That was a cracker, there was no doubt about it. The six faces all had the same expression of grudging respect that she had seen from Moonzip before. You need to keep your eyes open to connect to the audience, a severe-looking young lady told her. But you've got a good voice, I'll give you that. Old-fashioned name, old-fashioned music. It was a middle-aged man, rather attractive, but with greying temples and a sarcastic smile. He glanced at the papers in front of him. You know, I closed my eyes when you were singing and I was seeing Gloria Gaynor in my mind's eye. Then I opened them to see a pale, skinny, rather nondescript girl. That's the magic of music. Athelfled's smile slipped. Gloria Gaynor? Who would let this moron in? She didn't bother to answer him, and as usual her blank stare was mistaken for simple-mindedness, and she was waved away. Athelfled spent the journey back to Davingstock spitting blood. He could have compared me to Aretha Franklin or Etta James, but he says I remind him of Gloria Gaynor, the woman who took the soul out of soul music. Don't tell me he's coming anywhere near me, because he couldn't teach me anything worth learning. The important thing is that you did as well as you could, Samantha patiently observed, because if that's why you're so upset, it doesn't sound like there's much to complain about. He compared me to Gloria Gaynor. Who are you kidding? You can't get much nastier than that. Yet 2 days later, after checking the results and seeing that she had gone through to the second audition, she hardly noticed that she was humming I Will Survive as she walked up to the monastery for another day with Moonzip. Life was good. The feeling didn't last too long. That morning, Athelstan had been invited to spend a day on the beach with some friends. Athelfled's father was working in the library, and she had put on some steak and kidney pies in the oven. Since Moonzip had discovered bangers and mash, steak and kidney pies, crumpets and baked beans, he had forgotten all about his peanut butter and chocolate sandwiches. Out of the corner of her eye, Athelfled suddenly saw Dean cross the street and open the gates to the tiny front garden. What was he doing here? Dean had never come around without Samantha. With her heart banging against her chest, Athelfled ran through to the living room, grabbed Moonzip by the scruff of the neck and dragged him towards the stairs. Not one word, she hissed. Go up to Stan's room and don't come out until I tell you to. If you do as I say, you'll get brownie points, but if you don't, this will be your last day on earth. Have I made myself clear? The doorbell rang. Moonzip opened his mouth to say something, but saw Athelfled's expression and closed it. As he scampered away, Athelfled turned and rushed to the mirror, patting her hair and wiping the flour from her face. Her cheeks were bright red. She was in a right state, but there was no time to react. Performance, performance, she told herself, breathing deeply as if for a concert, and opening the door with a smile. Oh, Dean, what a surprise. It's not like you to come around here. Are you on your own, Ethel? He asked. He looked evasive. Yes, she stammered. Stan and that American kid? They've gone into town. She stretched her lips back to make a smile. I was just cooking. Come in. No point standing around here, is there? Athelfled closed the door behind her friend's brother, trying to control herself. Was this the moment she had dreamed of so often, but had never really believed possible? What's up, Dean? Is anything the matter? Dean was clearly nervous. No, nothing's wrong, Ethel. It's just that... He paused. I'm not very good at talking about this sort of thing, that's why. What sort of thing, Dean? They were standing face to face. About, you know, feelings and things. Can I sit down? Yes, of course. Let's sit here. She saw Dean's gaze on her. I'm going to faint, she thought, and sat down beside him. Dean licked his lips nervously. We've known each other for a long time, haven't we, Ethel? Athelflaed nodded enthusiastically, but said nothing. She leaned forward. But we've never really had any time to talk. I mean, just you and me. But I think I know you well enough after all this time. I need to tell you something. It's like a sort of confession. Another pause. Don't stop now, pleaded Athelflaed silently. She lifted her eyebrows encouragingly. And just at that moment, a snigger was heard from behind the sofa. Athelflaed froze. Dean looked horrified. What's that? Moonzip! Athelflaed screamed. What are you doing here? A small figure dashed out of the room. Quick steps were heard running up the stairs. You told me there was nobody home, cried Dean, getting to his feet. I have to go. I had no idea, Dean. I thought he was with my brother. As she ran after Dean, Athelflaed had a sudden flashback to her scene with the Italians in the restaurant some weeks before. Finish what you were saying, please. He's upstairs now. Another time, Ethel, not now. He looked flustered. Hurriedly, he stepped outside and disappeared. The door closed on Athelflaed, and there was silence. Athelflaed knocked her forehead against the door a couple of times. Her thin lips grew thinner. Her pale skin grew paler and her narrow eyes closed into slits. She turned and headed for the stairs. Moonzip! She had never screamed as loud as her in her life. Prepare to meet your maker! There was no answer. She walked into Stan's room. Come out now, she whispered soothingly, and your death will be swift and painless. I swear this time it's a promise I'll keep. I've taken the cat hostage, came a muffled voice from under the bed. Lay a finger on me and he's done for. Athelflaed heard a soft meow. So what you gonna do now? Squeaky, don't you touch him, Mooney. What's up, girl? Nothing will happen if you promise you won't touch me either. Athelflaed could do nothing. Moonzip appeared from under the bed, holding up the poor cat like Simba in The Lion King, grinning like a lunatic. Ethel's got a boyfriend, he chanted. Athelflaed stuck her face into his. Maybe you should keep quiet about this. Most accidents happen at home, and I'd feel really guilty if you fell down the stairs or something dropped on your head. The boy pushed his face back into hers. Maybe we should do a little, lady. Silence has its price. Don't push your luck, Mooney. Today's a bad day. Athelflaed paused. Something was not right. My pies! She screamed. A smell of burning had reached the bedroom from the kitchen. Moonzip laughed gleefully. Hey, you're so cool, babe. But she was already downstairs. Where's your mum? Asked Moonzip one day, sitting at a terrace in the town square. I thought families in England had mums. I have a mum, Athelflaed smiled. She just doesn't live with us, that's all. So your mum and pop don't live together either. Where does she live? She travels around the country in an ice cream van. Moonzip's eyes almost popped out of his head. An ice cream van? You've never seen one. The next time you hear music coming from the street, look outside because it's the ice cream man. He stops for a few minutes and then carries on. Yeah, man, we got those in the States. That's so cool. You got such a great mum. A thought struck him. And what's she doing, winner? Sell hot dogs, I suppose, laughed Athelstan. Wow, if I had a mum like that, I'd tell, like, everybody. I'm so jealous. What about your mum? Athelflaed sipped her tea. Not enough sugar. And Brad? It's Brad, isn't it? This could be a world exclusive, she thought to herself wryly. Moonzip shrugged. He's okay. He gives me stuff. And your mum? Moonzip lowered his head and said nothing. You're pushing it, Athelflaed thought, and decided to drop the subject. Then she noted that his shoulders were shaking. Mooney, what's the matter? What's up? The boy lifted his head and wailed, I don't want to go back. I want to stay here with you and Stan and Heidi and Squeaky and Budgie. I'm not going back. Athelstan looked shocked and started to squirm in his seat nervously. Moonzip's eyes were closed, his mouth was open, and his howl was heard at the other tables. People were turning in their seats to see what was happening. Athelflaed quickly sat down beside him and put an arm around his shoulders. Moonzip, don't be daft. What are you crying for? She had no idea what else to say. Cheer up, Moony. After a few minutes, the sobs turned into sniffles. Athelflaed paid the bills and stood up. Come on, Moony, we better get you back to your dad. If she was uncomfortable, Athelstan was completely spooked. I'll see you tomorrow, Moony. I'm going to the shops before they close. He made his excuses and left. On their own, Athelflaed and Moonzip headed back to the monastery, stopping to throw some breadcrumbs at the swans and ducks by the lake. Moonzip was unusually quiet, and Athelflaed was happy to leave him with his thoughts, partly so as not to upset him again, and partly because she was enjoying the silence. Do you see your mom much? The American asked her suddenly. I mean, does she pop around in the van to see y'all? Athelflaed glanced at him and smiled. Not so much. Sometimes we meet up at my gran's house in Cornwall on holiday. Moonzip was observing her gravely. When was the last time you saw her? Last summer. But she calls from time to time, and she always sends us cards at Christmas and on our birthdays. Moonzip's eyes widened. Wow, he whistled. She remembers your birthdays? I'd love to meet your mum. She sounds like so cool. Athelflaed laughed and, for the second time, put her arm around him. Moonzip tells me you want to be a singer. Norman was sitting on a deck chair under an apple tree. He had a china cup of chamomile tea and was listening to jazz. Chamomile tea and jazz? Athelflaed was glad her brother had been spared the shock of seeing his rock legend in this way. He might never get over it. Imagining that his idol ate bats' heads and drank their blood was like believing in Father Christmas, she thought to herself. I'm going to try. That's where my earnings are going, she answered. Would you mind giving me a sample? He switched off the radio. I'd love to. And she meant it. Athelflaed was always happy to sing. After a pause, she cleared her throat and sang the first verse of Etta James, At Last. At last my love has come along, my lonely days are over, and life is like a song. At last the skies above are blue, that my heart was wrapped up in clover the night I looked at you. She opened her eyes to see the rock star stroking his chin sadly. Wonderful voice, absolutely wonderful, he murmured, almost to himself. Do you know what my father told me when I started singing? No. A gift is a duty. Norman was rocking back on his heels, looking up at the sky nostalgically. That's what he used to tell me. If you have a talent, you have a duty to develop it and nurture it, no matter if you succeed. He paused. My father was a Baptist minister, you know. Oh? Athelflaed had no idea. She smiled involuntarily. Now she had met a real son of a preacher man. I started singing in the church choir, and that's when he told me that. Son, a gift is a duty, he told me. Norman seemed to have forgotten about Athelflaed and was now talking to himself. My mum wanted me to be a banker or an insurance salesman. She wasn't happy about my career in music. He sighed and looked at the girl in front of him as if he needed her approval. Nor was my dad, actually. I don't think he expected the direction I took. Athelflaed's poker face and slow reactions was the reason why half of Davingstock thought she was dim. Seeing that she did not answer, Norman seemed to come back to his senses, coughing sheepishly. You sing wonderfully. It puts me to shame. Before Athelflaed could answer, he lay down with his tea and switched on the radio again. See you tomorrow, Athelflaed. See you, Norman. She answered and turned back home.